Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and today's conversation is with Rich Haley, Chief Financial Officer at the FBI. Also joining us from IBM is Angela Carrington. Rich, guiding the development of FBI's budget strategy are six enterprise-wide capabilities that FBI needs in order to perform its various missions. First, would you outline those end state capabilities? But more importantly, would you elaborate on the extent to which FBI links its budget planning process to its strategic vision to ensure investments are made correctly?
Sure. And I think this is probably when I go around and talk about the FBI and how we've evolved, and some might call it more revolutionary change with the events following 9/11. I think this is one of the areas where corporately we're very proud of. If you look at the FBI, we're 101 years old. We celebrated our 100th anniversary last year. Pretty cool to be part of that. An organization that started out with a handful of agents doing land fraud and antitrust, evolving forward to the bootlegging was done in the G-Men days of gangsters and up through World War II, where you had espionage cases and then civil rights, counterintelligence during the Cold War, counterterrorism cases with the domestic terrorism on something like Oklahoma City, as well as First World Trade Center bombing, up to 9/11. You have the director taking over the organization just a week before the 9/11 events occur. And the transformation of that, where we really have had to focus on national security, terrorism being our top area of priority. And out of that, and especially over the last 7 or 8 years, we had to address the issue of we're not a series of stovepipes where your criminal activities and your counterterrorism activities and your counterintelligence activities can stand on their own. And how do you link that together? And I have what I call our Olympic rings, which you've referred to as our in-state capabilities. And it's these six areas. They're all somewhat dependent. The first one being what we call domain and operations. And this is the thread that goes through everything is for each of our divisions, field divisions, to know their domain, know what's going on in their domain. And that's our intelligence activities. And it's all of those operational things that are required. And how do we support those through the budget process in terms of where we need to go? You can't exclusively look at national security at the expense of the criminal divisions, or else you have a lopsided organization. Beyond that, the other in-states for us are surveillance. What the FBI does and what an intelligence organization does has a lot to do with where we're getting our information. And for an organization like ours, it's through court-ordered wiretaps. It's through physical surveillances that we do. And when the world changed from what was within the Cold War, where we were doing a lot of activity with finite targets, it's a very asymmetrical world now where we're out there, you know, having to look at a lot of different type of targets for a lot of different threat areas. And surveillance is a huge initiative for us. And for an in-state, it's what resources do we need over a period of time? We can't have them all today. We couldn't absorb them if we got them. But what are those resources over a period of time that we need to integrate? And with that, we can establish what risks go along with that. And the other one's partnerships. I think one of the things that came out of 9/11 is the information sharing and the coordination with our federal, state, local partners, as well as our international partners. So that's a key initiative that we track in terms of in-state capabilities to make sure we're putting the right resources towards partnerships. Another big one for us is leveraging technology, whether it's on cybercrime or technologies that we would put in place to do different technical operations. But also, we do fingerprints for the country. We do name checks, and those systems that allow us to provide those to our customers are critical in the technology area. And then just as important as those operational ones and some of the operational support ones are the workforce. And workforce is a key in-state for us in terms of training, in terms of bringing on specialty type of positions like linguists. Having a linguist that can do multiple different languages that we encounter is critical. And finally, infrastructure. Because whether or not you have all the agents that you need or all the surveillance resources, if you don't have the infrastructure, the computer systems, the facilities, and when you have over 400 facilities across the country, you can imagine the different issues that may come up in terms of the security for those facilities, the utilities for those facilities, and all of those type of activities. The FBI, I like to tell people that wasn't too long ago that we were an organization that was made up of different locations with gray desks and gray file cabinets, and you may have had a telephone in the room. But today, with our computer systems and our need to be able to communicate not with ourselves but with other organizations, that infrastructure is a key part of that, and those in-state capabilities are at the heart of that.
How has the Bureau expanded the use of financial data to inform its decision-making? And more importantly, how have you used your office as a driving force in that regard?
It has a lot to do with the partnerships that have been forged within the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We have a sister organization called our Resource Planning Office that oversees strategy, corporate strategy, and we work very closely with them. And several years ago, the director implemented a balanced scorecard. Our balanced scorecard is called the Strategic Management System. We have a corporate scorecard, and it has all the key requirements, initiatives, if you will, we have to address to be successful. And then under the corporate model, each of our divisions have a strategy map that tie up to the corporate map. What we've done is align all of our resources within the FBI to these strategy maps. So we can look at, if you look at collections, for example, how many resources are going towards our overall collection activities, not just in one division, but across all of the different organizations. Working closely with our resource planning office, we've aligned what those resources are for each of those categories, and then we go through what I call spin plans. We do approximately 24 of these with our headquarters divisions. And at the heart of that is something we call the baseball card. And the baseball card is quite frankly that. It's a set of metrics for each of our divisions. And we put the picture of the executive management from that division and their name. And that creates an ownership. And oftentimes when you have that ownership, you get more attention to the metrics that are coming out of that. And from these cards, we then have for each of these divisions about 2.5 hours of discussion in terms of, are they aligning to priorities? Are there different initiatives tracking to the overall director priorities and the strategy? Are we executing our resources effectively? And we look at those acquisitions and accounting metrics as well to ensure that we are being good stewards of the resources. And that has given us a lot of viability back to the operational side of the house. It's not enough to just track the finances. It's how do you put that back into a way where our special agents, our executive management, ultimately the director and our deputy can actually use that or leverage that to make decisions across the organization.
Rich, the FBI has adopted a multi-year budgeting cycle. Could you tell us how this enhances business planning and analysis of out-year impacts of current budget decisions? Also, how does this approach improve your ability to coordinate with the Director of National Intelligence and the other intelligence agencies?
Well, as a civilian agency within the federal government, we, like most of our counterparts, brethren agencies, use an annual budgeting process. We've done this for years. And when you're going through transformations that, such as we have over the last 7 or 8 years, where you're getting a large influx of resources, some of those are capital expenditures. It's very hard on an annual process to determine, you know, this year we might have to do some architectural work on a facility. The next year we may need the first tranche of funds to start building. But that may be a 3 or 4 year process in terms of getting all the resources and actually being able to move forward with a complex facility construction or even an IT system. The intel community, the Department of Defense, for a number of years have used multi-year, five-year budgeting. And we incorporated, this will be our fourth year, using a multi-year budgeting approach, which is geared towards us not only looking at the threats today, but trying to better anticipate what threats or what risk mitigations that we need to be putting in place today to be prepared for activities in the future. I think the economic crisis is a good example of that. If you just look in terms of how quickly what happened in the mortgage fraud area and what happened in some of the financial crime situations that we're dealing with today, those came up quickly. But our ability to try to forecast and get in front of those, so we have those resources in place. Right now, we're trying to bring on the resources, many of which had been redirected towards national security over the last 7 or 8 years and had reduced our ability to do criminal cases, white-collar crime cases. We're having to build back those resources. And by using a multi-year budgeting approach, not only, as you said, allows us to better communicate with our intel partners, because it's a similar model that they're using, but it also allows us to look for those next potential crime waves or threats that we may be facing so we can be building for them today.
So moving on from talking about budgeting to talking about financial statements, I understand that the FBI has received an unqualified opinion on its principal financial statements, which demonstrates a clear pattern of financial accountability. So can you kind of talk about what the significance is of obtaining a clean opinion and what you think the keys are to successfully achieving a timely and clean opinion?
I very much appreciate you asking that question. I'm very proud of my guys in terms of our efforts this year. We've had an unqualified opinion for a number of years. What's significant for us this year is it's the first time after 14 actual unqualified opinions where we not only have an unqualified opinion, we have no material weaknesses, which are very high-level problems that have been identified by independent auditors, but we also have no significant deficiencies. So in other words, we have an unqualified opinion, which in accounting world is important to show that you're being good stewards and you're being accountable for all of your resources. That's huge significance, especially when you take into account that we have a 30-year-old financial system. I think it would be very easy for us to basically ride out until we get a new financial system in place saying it's just too hard to achieve those type of results. I think it's a tribute to staff I have, but it's more than just the finance division. A lot of times people think because they're financial statements, it's the finance division that's exclusively dealing with it. We have a lot of other partners within the FBI, our facilities office, our human resource division, our CIO's office that contribute to the success of that. And I think if you put it in context to, again, the financial investigations that we do as an organization, the white-collar crime activities, us being the ones that are responsible, the lead agency to investigate those type of crimes, you want the organization that's doing that outward to have as clean of opinion as possible. And in terms of our ability to have pulled that off with the current conditions has been a phenomenal activity. And as we go forward, I think that our ability to kind of wave the flag to some extent in terms of us being good stewards also goes a long way with our external partners that, you know, if you do put resources into the FBI, we're going to make sure that they're accounted for and we're going to ensure that there isn't waste, fraud, and abuse going on with those resources.
Congratulations on that. That is a significant achievement. And speaking of external sources, OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, has indicated that the federal government made $98 billion in improper payments this fiscal year. So obviously reducing improper payments is critical. First, what are improper payments? Could you talk about that a little bit? And then talk about how you specifically have successfully managed and reduced improper payments within the FBI.
So this is one of our main areas within my responsibilities on the accounting side that we watch very closely. Improper payments for us could be anything from an erroneous payment. You're paying the wrong vendor. You're paying a vendor the wrong amount. Having a manual system where we're still using carbon copies for a number of our invoices and accounting functions and our acquisition functions, oftentimes for us, it's as simple as you may have a payment of $535,000 and you get the numbers twisted up and it's $353,000. For 100% support, the effort that Director Orzag and OMB are taking in terms of highlighting this, our portion of that $98 billion is less than 0.03%. We're talking several million dollars out of $3.5 billion that we execute. But even with that, the processes that we've put in place, the internal control mechanisms, even if an improper payment for, and again, for us, it's usually where numbers have been misinterpreted when they've been keyed in from a manually filled out form or something like that, we will continue to follow up. And last year, for example, out of several million dollars that were identified as improper payments, we have chased each of those down in terms of reconciling that. So it is a zero-sum game for us, but I think we're very much ahead of where organizations of our size are often at. In addition to improper payments, you know, one of the other areas or several of the areas that I also track in that same metric are prompt payment penalties. And these are penalties that you pay just like it was your own bills where you don't pay the bill on time, you incur an interest payment. For $3.5 billion, our entire prompt payment penalty in 2009 was about $294,000. Another area in terms of that same focus that OMB has put on that is our inventory. I mentioned we have over 500,000 pieces of equipment. When I got to the FBI, it was about 96% that we were accountable for. That meant we were losing or having stolen about about 4% of our inventory. Today, it's up to 99.8%, which has a lot to do with a top-down approach from the director and our executive management across the organization in terms of being able to achieve those type of results, which we think are, again, critical in order for us to effectively say that we're being good stewards of our resources.
Rich, picking up on the good steward concept, tracking cost and managing costs is essential to being a good steward. What steps has the Bureau taken to track and manage costs, and such as the cost of investigations?
That is a huge effort. It's, as you can imagine, very complex, because even if you can track something like the amount of time we're spending for agents to do a case, so let's say we have the personnel cost, all of the other costs that go along with that, the cost of operating the case, the infrastructure cost, the CIO or the IT costs that go along with that. It's very hard to get our arms around that. The approach that we've taken on that over the last 10, 15 years, we've used activity-based costing with our user fees. Our user fees are revenue sources that we receive for the fingerprint operation that we run, as well as our name check operation. And we've used activity-based costing to give us a total cost of those activities. And we've recently expanded that activity-based costing focus to several of our other entities, training division for us, in terms of how much does it cost. It's always been a question of how much does it cost to train an agent at our Quantico FBI Academy, or an Intel analyst that's going through training. We've taken this activity-based costing model, which does capture these total costs, and we've implemented a model for the first time that gives us a very good understanding of what it costs to train an agent, train an intelligence analyst. Our training division initiated that, and now we're going the next step of taking that activity-based costing approach, implementing it into all of our support functions as well as our operational divisions. So when you look at something like a cyber case, a cybercrime case, what is it on average that it does require us to do a case like that? And how do we align resources and have some forecasting ability to say, you know, if we do 10 cases, it's going to cost approximately this much. And it will give, I think, another factor in terms of executive management making decisions in terms of how to prioritize and where to put resources by going forward with that. The baseball cards I mentioned earlier are also another area where I think we've identified in terms of pulling out, teasing out, if you will, the cost of doing business. We show all of the programs within each of our divisions, and then we rank each of those programs corporately in terms of how much funding each program's taking. We can then compare not only counterterrorism cases to other national security cases, but we can compare them to our criminal cases and compare them to some of our other support functions. And it gives us a mechanism where we can provide to the director and provide to executive management what it's costing to run the organization. And that then creates a whole set of policy and procedural discussions in terms of, are we putting all of our resources to our highest priorities, or are there things that we can shift around to try to make as effective use as possible of our base resources before we go out and ask for additional enhancements?
Terrific. What are some of the key procurement challenges facing the FBI? We will ask Rich Haley, Chief Financial Officer at the FBI, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.